Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into Lawrence in Arabia by Scott Anderson, a compelling narrative that explores the pivotal role a small group of individuals played in reshaping the Middle East during World War I and the Arab Revolt. At the heart of this story is T.E. Lawrence, an audacious, untrained young military officer caught between allegiances to two nations, navigating the treacherous waters of political promises and the brutal realities of warfare. Author Scott Anderson, a seasoned journalist with extensive experience reporting from conflict zones like Lebanon, Israel, and Bosnia, brings a vivid and insightful perspective to this historical account. His work, featured in renowned publications such as Esquire, Vanity Fair, and the New York Times Magazine, has positioned him as a credible voice in recounting tales from war-torn regions. Lawrence in Arabia is no exception, offering readers a meticulously researched, thrilling narrative that highlights the complexities of war, diplomacy, and the human spirit. This book is an essential read for students and historians keen on uncovering the intricacies of World War I, individuals fascinated by the history of the Middle East, or anyone seeking a story that combines historical depth with the thrill of an adventure. Join us as we explore how T.E. Lawrence and a cast of characters embarked on a mission that would forever alter the course of history in the Middle East. Lawrence in Arabia, War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East. Introduction. The Sands of Time. Unveiling the Four Architects of the Modern Middle East. It's not every day that you hear about individuals whose actions have directly sculpted the geopolitical landscape of an entire region. Yet, amidst the chaos and destruction of World War I, four men found themselves in a unique position to do just that. To Lawrence, a British archaeologist turned military officer, Kurt Prüfer, a German diplomat and spy, Aaron Aronson, a Romanian agronomist who founded a Jewish spy network, and William Yale, an American oil company agent turned State Department advisor. Their stories intertwine across the deserts of the Middle East, amidst the backdrop of one of history's most devastating wars, each playing a pivotal role in drawing the map of the modern Middle East. As these narratives unfold, we are swept into a world where espionage, shifting alliances, and daring military tactics determined the fate of nations. We'll see how Prüfer used his influence and connections within the crumbling Ottoman Empire to realign allegiances, nudging the scales in favor of German interests. Meanwhile, Lawrence's audacious capture of Aqaba, a strategic port pivotal to British efforts in the region, came at a significant cost, a moment of triumph tinged with betrayal and loss. Beyond these daring exploits lies the shadow of the Sykes-Picot Agreement, a secret treaty that carved up the Middle East between France and Britain, setting the stage for a century of turmoil and conflict. This chapter offers not just a glimpse into the individual feats of these men, but a profound understanding of how their actions and the machinations of imperial powers have left a lasting imprint on the Middle East, a legacy of borders and conflicts that continues to shape our world today. Through the lens of history, we come to comprehend the complex interplay of ambition, duty, and the often unintended consequences of geopolitical strategy. The narrative of these four men, each with his own vision for the Middle East, yet tangled in a web of global power struggles, reveals the human element behind the geopolitical chess game, offering a compelling exploration of how individual choices can alter the course of history. Part 1. From Oxford to Carchemish, the Making of Lawrence of Arabia. Long before he became a legendary figure immortalized in film and literature, Thomas Edward Lawrence was just a young Englishman with an insatiable thirst for history. Born in 1888 in the cobblestone city of Oxford, Lawrence was not born into the corridors of power, but found his gateway to greatness through the annals of history. His journey from a fascinated teenager wandering the halls of the University of Oxford's Ashmolean Museum to a pivotal player on the desert stages of the Middle East is a tale of curiosity turned destiny. In 1909, as he neared the completion of his undergraduate studies, Lawrence set his sights on a thesis that was both audacious and singular in its ambition. He embarked on a rigorous journey across Syria on foot, a testament to his deep commitment to unearthing the lessons of the past. His quest? To explore the ancient castles of the Crusades and decode the architectural dialogue between Christian and Muslim builders. This undertaking was no small feat, and yet it was but the prelude to a life that would become deeply entwined with the fate of the Middle East. The warmth and hospitality he encountered during this voyage left an indelible mark on Lawrence, igniting a love for the region that would shape his future. His thesis not only earned acclaim at Oxford, but also paved the way for his deeper involvement in the Middle East, leading to an invitation to join an archaeological excavation in Carchemish. By 1911, Lawrence found himself at the helm of the excavation site, nestled at a crossroads of cultures on the border of Turkey and Syria. It was here, among ancient ruins, that Lawrence honed his leadership skills and deepened his understanding of Middle Eastern culture. His adaptability, resilience, and respect for local traditions earned him the admiration of both his colleagues and the local communities. In letters home, he spoke of feeling a profound connection to the land and its people, a sentiment that transcended mere scholarly interest. Under the scorching desert sun, Lawrence was not just uncovering artifacts. He was laying the groundwork for his future role as a bridge between cultures. As Europe teetered on the brink of World War I, Lawrence's journey was poised to take a dramatic turn. From the dusty ruins of Carchemish, he would step onto a larger stage, where his knowledge, courage, and convictions would mark him as one of history's most fascinating figures. This chapter of Lawrence's life, from the academic halls of Oxford to the ancient city of Carchemish, is a chronicle of transformation, the making of Lawrence of Arabia. Part 2, Converging Destinies, the untold stories of three influential men in the Middle East. As the sands of the Middle East whispered stories of ancient times, they also bore witness to the arrival of three distinct but equally fascinating characters, each destined to leave an indelible mark on the region and its history. Beyond the figure of T.E. Lawrence, whose exploits have captured the imaginations of many, these men, a spy, an agronomist, and a businessman, played critical, though less celebrated roles, in the dramatic prelude to World War I. First among them was Kurt Prüfer, a German diplomat with a talent for languages and a heart set on espionage. By the age of 33, Prüfer's passion had steered him far from conventional diplomatic duties. Stationed at the German embassy in Cairo, he found himself tangled in the intricate web of Middle Eastern politics. Fueled by visions of undermining British dominance in Egypt, Prüfer and his network of German spies fanned the flames of dissent, encouraging Egyptian Muslims to rebel against their British rulers. Yet, by late 1913, British intelligence caught the scent of intrigue, leading to Prüfer's dismissal from the embassy. But history would soon reveal that Prüfer's adventures in the Middle East were far from over. Meanwhile, in Palestine, just a stone's throw from the contested waters of the Suez Canal, stood a man of quite different ambitions, Aaron Aronson, a Jewish agronomist acclaimed for his contributions to agricultural science. Dedicated his life to nurturing the parched lands of Palestine back to vitality. Yet, beneath his scientific endeavors lay a fervent Zionist heart, dreaming of a homeland where Jews from across the world could thrive. Aronson's dual pursuits of agricultural innovation and political advocacy intertwined, propelling him into the complex mosaic of Middle Eastern affairs. The third figure in this triptych of destinies was William Yale, scion of the once affluent Yale family, whose legacy spanned centuries but whose fortunes had dwindled by the time William came of age. Seeking new horizons, Yale turned his eyes toward the Middle East, securing a position with Standard Oil. Tasked with uncovering new oil reserves, Yale found himself drawn into a world of intrigue and opportunity far beyond the realms of business. As the tensions of the world stage escalated, the tales of these three men, a spy, an agronomist, and an oil man, converged in the arid lands of the Middle East. Each driven by his own convictions and aspirations, their stories are a testament to the complex tapestry of events and personalities that shaped the region in the shadow of the impending Great War. These narratives unfold a rich mosaic of ambitions, betrayals, and unanticipated alliances, illuminating the roles played by individuals whose impact rippled through the sands of time, influencing the course of history in ways still felt today. Part 3: A Tapestry of Turmoil, the Deteriorating Ottoman Empire, and the Dawn of World War I. As 1913 drew to a close, four distinct figures, Lawrence, Prufer, Aronson, and Yale, gazed upon the vast expanse of the Ottoman Empire, recognizing the same ominous signs of an empire in its twilight. The Ottoman Empire, once a colossal power that stretched from the depths of Africa to the heart of Europe, was unraveling at the edges, weakened by centuries of conflict and internal strife. For hundreds of years, the empire had presided over a territory encompassing diverse cultures, religions, and peoples, from Algeria and northern Africa across the Middle East to the Caspian Sea, and reaching as far north as Budapest. Its zenith had seen alliances forged and battles fought alongside European powers in conflicts like the Crimean War. Yet the aftermath of the Russo-Turkish Wars through the 1800s saw the empire's territorial dominion erode, with lands such as Egypt slipping under British influence, and the Balkans breaking away to form independent nations. By the eve of World War I, the core regions remaining under Ottoman rule, including Syria, Turkey, and Palestine, teetered on the brink of instability. This fragility was exacerbated by the empire's vibrant but volatile mosaic of Muslims, Christians, and Jews. Further stirring the pot of unrest was the ascent of the Young Turks, a revolutionary political movement that, by 1913, had seized control to establish a new government helmed by the three pashas, Talat, Enver, and Cemal. Their leadership, however ambitious, faced the Sisyphean task of holding together an empire crumbling under the weight of internal divisions and external pressures. Into this cauldron of chaos stepped the specter of global conflict. The assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand on June 29, 1914, lit the fuse of what would become World War I, a conflagration that would engulf nations and empires in a struggle for supremacy. The Ottoman Empire, weakened and wavering, found itself at a crossroads, its allegiance in the impending war uncertain. Amidst this backdrop of uncertainty, Kurt Prufer, undeterred by his earlier expulsion from the German embassy, continued to weave his web of espionage and intrigue. Operating from the shadows, Prufer sought to exploit the empire's vulnerabilities, coaxing the Ottomans towards conflict with the British and their dominion over Egypt. His machinations would find a receptive ear in Cemal Pasha, forging a connection that would ultimately see Prufer act as the German liaison to the Ottoman leadership. As the embers of war began to glow brighter, the fates of nations and the destinies of these four remarkable men became intertwined with the decline of the Ottoman Empire. Their stories, set against the backdrop of an empire's fall and the dawn of modern warfare, are emblematic of the discrete moments and decisions that can alter the course of history. In the shadow of an empire's slow demise, the stage was set for a conflict that would reshape the world and mark the beginning of an era defined by the legacies of Lawrence, Prufer, Aronson, and Yale. Part 4: When Empires Clash, the Harrowing Onset of World War I in the Middle East. As the embers of global conflict were fanned into the blazing inferno of World War I, the world's great powers quickly aligned themselves. The Allied powers, anchored by the might of the British Empire, France, and Russia, found themselves pitted against the Central Powers, led by the formidable duo of Germany and Austria-Hungary. Into this global chess game, the Ottoman Empire cast its lot with the Central Powers on November 2, 1914, setting the stage for a dramatic escalation of the war's horrors, particularly in the Middle East. The impact of the Ottoman Empire's allegiance was felt keenly by Aronson, who witnessed the brutal requisitioning of resources by the military. Homes were stripped bare of essentials, clothing, food, vehicles, even plumbing parts, leaving civilians in dire straits. The situation was particularly perilous for Jews and Christians, many of whom were disarmed and forced into labor camps. While waves of Jews began to flee from the turmoil, Aronson's resolve to stay in Palestine only grew stronger as he bore witness to the escalating violence and desperation. Meanwhile, T.E. Lawrence, leveraging his extensive knowledge of the region and its peoples, took up a pivotal role in the British Military Intelligence Office in Cairo. The early stages of his involvement were marked by anticipation, as strategies were carefully weighed. However, the dynamics shifted dramatically following an attack on Egypt's Suez Canal, masterminded by Kurt Prüfer and the Turkish forces. Though the attack faltered, its implications galvanized the British to consider their own countermeasures. Lawrence, ever the strategist, recommended an offensive targeting the Gulf of Alexandretta, citing its strategic advantages, from the welcoming deep harbor to the expected support from local Arabs and Armenians. Despite his counsel, however, the Allied command elected to pursue a different path, one that would lead to the infamous Gallipoli campaign. The decision to focus on Gallipoli reflected a tragic underestimation of modern warfare's lethal efficiency, particularly the devastating impact of machine guns on traditional military tactics. As the British and French forces made landfall on the Gallipoli Peninsula in April 1915, they were met with a nightmare scenario. Soldiers, trapped on landing boats and struggling to reach the shores, were mercilessly cut down by Turkish gunfire. The carnage was so extreme that on the first day alone, 4,000 lives were lost, painting the waters red with blood, a ghastly testament to the brutality of war and the misguided calculations of military strategists. The Gallipoli campaign would be remembered not only for its staggering loss of life, but also as a sobering illustration of the tragic folly and miscalculations that can mar the conduct of wars, leaving indelible scars across nations and generations. Part 5, Amidst War's Turmoil: Wrestling with Moral Dilemmas and Political Machinations. As the brutal machinery of World War I churned across continents, two men, Lawrence and Yale, found themselves entangled in a web of ethical quandaries and disillusionment born from the actions and decisions of those around them. William Yale, initially embodying the spirit of American enterprise in his exploratory missions for Standard Oil, soon found himself playing a part in a scheme that tested his moral compass. Tasked with securing vast tracts of land under false pretenses, Yale was thrust into the murky waters of wartime deception. The plan was simple, yet underhanded: negotiate with Jamal Pasha for drilling rights on Ottoman lands, all the while harboring no intention of initiating operations until after the war had concluded. Although Yale managed to muster the resolve to ask for a significant portion of land, the agreement struck with Jamal Pasha weighed heavily on his conscience, knowing the expectations of quick oil production were built on a foundation of falsehoods. As the war progressed, Yale's journey back to the United States prompted a profound reflection on his experiences in the Middle East. With the realization that his firsthand knowledge of the region could serve the Allied cause, Yale began to envision a role for himself beyond the interests of Standard Oil, marking the start of an unexpected pivot towards diplomatic affairs. Simultaneously, T.E. Lawrence's frustrations with the bureaucratic inefficiencies and strategic blunders of the British military command were reaching a boiling point. The Gallipoli campaign, with its tragic miscalculations and needless loss of life, stood as a testament to the deadly consequences of incompetence and political maneuvering. Lawrence's acute awareness of the alternatives ignored by his superiors, notably the potential advantages of striking at Alexandretta, only intensified his disillusionment compounded by the realization that geopolitical ambitions, particularly those of the French government regarding post-war control of Syria, were influencing military decisions, Lawrence grappled with a pressing desire to transcend the constraints of his role in military intelligence. For Lawrence, the drive to take action on the ground, to leverage his intimate knowledge of the region and its people, in pursuit of a more direct impact, was becoming an imperative. In contrast to Yale's gradual awakening to the broader implications of his work, Lawrence's journey was one of deepening resolve to confront the flawed machinery of war and diplomacy head-on. Together, the experiences of Yale and Lawrence during these formative years of conflict underscore a shared narrative of moral complexity and the struggle to find purpose amidst the chaos and deceptions of war. As each man navigated his own path through the ethical and political labyrinth of World War I, their evolving convictions and actions reflected a broader quest for integrity and meaningful contribution in a world torn asunder by violence and ambition. Part 6: The Seeds of Rebellion, Betrayal and Brotherhood in the Arab Uprising. At a pivotal moment in World War I, the winds of change began to stir in the Middle East, heralded by the whispers of an impending Arab uprising. This surge of rebellion, rooted in the yearnings for Arab autonomy and the thickets of wartime diplomacy, was catalyzed by an unexpected source, a single Arab lieutenant who, upon surrendering to the British, unveiled the simmering discontent and readiness for revolution within the Arab ranks, particularly in Mecca. The revelation set the stage for a delicate dance of negotiation between the British and the Arab leadership, personified by King Emir Hussein and his son, Prince Faisal ibn Hussein. The year was 1915, and the air was thick with the promise and peril of alliances yet to be forged. King Hussein's demand was clear. Arab territories must be granted independence following the war. The British, eager to secure an Arab alliance against the Ottoman forces, agreed in principle but cloaked the specifics of these negotiations in secrecy from the French, wary of their claims on Syria. Into this crucible of covert diplomacy stepped T.E. Lawrence, appointed as the British liaison to Prince Faisal's burgeoning force. Lawrence's departure from the confines of his desk job to the vast expanses of the desert marked the beginning of a legendary partnership and a crucial chapter in the narrative of the Arab uprising. On June 5, 1916, with a symbolic shot fired towards a Turkish fort by Emir Hussein, the uprising was ignited, setting the Middle East ablaze with dreams of freedom. As the sands of the desert bore witness to this nascent rebellion, a shadow loomed large. The Sykes-Picot Agreement. Crafted in the corridors of European power, this secret accord delineated the post-war division of Arab territories, pledging Syria to France and Iraq to Britain, with Palestine's fate to be a joint oversight. Lawrence, privy to the grim realities of this diplomatic duplicity, carried the burden of this knowledge, a specter haunting his every move. As Lawrence settled into his role alongside Prince Faisal in October 1916, a bond of mutual respect and shared vision began to forge between the British officer and the Arab prince. Faisal, with his charismatic leadership, endeavored to unite the disparate Arab tribes, while Lawrence, armed with his keen intelligence and a rare candor, confronted the complexities of loyalty and deceit. Despite the looming betrayal of the Sykes-Picot Agreement, Lawrence vowed to serve the Arab cause, revealing the contentious pact to Faisal and striving against the tide of imperial ambition to safeguard the promise of Arab independence. In the heart of the desert, amidst the echoes of revolt and the murmur of shifting alliances, Lawrence and Faisal's alliance became a testament to the profound impacts of personal integrity and the relentless pursuit of justice in the face of treachery. As the Arab uprising unfolded, it was not merely a battle for territory, but a profound struggle for the soul of a region caught between the aspirations of its people and the machinations of distant powers. Part 7: Shadow Warriors, the Jewish Espionage Network in the Fight for Survival. As the brutal gears of World War I churn through the landscapes and peoples of the Middle East, a parallel narrative of resilience and strategic daring unfolded, centered around Aaron Aronson and the Jewish community. Amidst the backdrop of devastating conflict and the horrific genocide of the Armenian people by the Ottoman Empire, Aronson's fears for the safety of the Jewish population in the region intensified. Bearing witness to the atrocities, he foresaw the potential for similar horrors to be inflicted upon the Jews, prompting him into action. Determined to turn the tide in favor of the Allied forces, and by extension, secure some measure of protection for his people, Aronson embarked on a bold mission, espionage. Initially, he meticulously catalogued valuable intelligence on Turkish military strengths and weaknesses, including troop locations, supply depots, and vulnerable coastlines. The challenge, however, lay in delivering this critical information to the British forces, who could leverage it against the Ottoman Empire. In a daring escape from the Ottoman-controlled territories, Aronson made his way to neutral Denmark in the summer of 1916, only to find himself in the hands of British authorities, oscillating between skepticism and cautious interest in his proposition. Subjected to scrutiny within the walls of Scotland Yard, Aronson fervently advocated for his role as a British military intelligence asset. His persistence paid off by March 1917, when he successfully convinced the British of his value, leading to the formation of an espionage network composed of 24 Jewish operatives, all under the leadership of his own sister, Sarah. This clandestine group, operating deep within the shadows, managed to relay crucial intelligence on Ottoman military movements for a time, playing a critical role in the Allied war effort. The network's operations, however, faced a tragic unraveling when one of the spies was apprehended in September 1917, leading to the capture and brutalization of the group by Turkish forces in early October. Amidst this chaos, Sarah Aronson's attempted flight from capture and subsequent agonizing death marked a somber chapter in their brave espionage efforts. Yet, even as his espionage network faced dismantlement, Aronson's influence extended into the political arena. Unbeknownst to him, as he mourned the loss of his sister and the cessation of his spy ring's activities, a significant political victory was unfolding. In November 1917, the British government issued the Balfour Declaration, a landmark statement endorsing the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. This declaration represented a glimmer of hope amidst the darkness of war, and a testament to Aronson's dual legacy as a spy mastermind and a Zionist advocate, cementing his indelible impact on the Jewish struggle for a homeland and the broader contours of World War I. Part 8: Strike at Dawn, Lawrence's Gambit, and Prufer's Oversight. In the sweeping dunes and rugged landscapes of the Middle East, as World War I raged on, two men found themselves charting contrasting courses through the tumult of conflict. By April 1917, T.E. Lawrence, now deeply intertwined with the destiny of the Arab uprising, made a pivotal shift away from the insignias of his British heritage, adopting instead the traditional garb of Arab warriors. This transformation was more than skin deep. It symbolized Lawrence's commitment to the Arab cause and his full immersion into the life of Prince Faisal's encampment. Understanding the stakes of the Sykes-Picot Agreement and its implications for Arab self-determination, Lawrence was imbued with a sense of urgency. The path to Arab independence, he knew, had to be carved out through strategic victories on the battlefield. Hence, Lawrence envisioned an audacious assault on the Turkish-held fort in Aqaba. This strategic locale, perched along the northern reaches of the Red Sea, stood as a gateway for further advances into Syria. Moreover, with intelligence suggesting an impending French assault on Aqaba, the race to secure the fort took on an added layer of geopolitical urgency. Lawrence's strategy defied conventional wisdom. Eschewing a direct naval attack, he instead proposed a daring inland march through the inhospitable terrain of the Wadi Sirhan Desert. The goal? to surprise the Ottoman forces by striking from the desert, from an angle they least expected. Meanwhile, far removed from the front lines and the brewing storm in the desert, Kurt Prüfer found himself ensconced within the bureaucratic machinery of the war effort in Constantinople. Tasked with the formulation of strategies over maps rather than through direct engagement, Prüfer's isolation from the battlefield realities rendered him oblivious to the unfolding dynamics of the Arab revolt and the clandestine efforts of the Jewish spy ring in Palestine. Despite clear signs of unrest and resistance, Prüfer's reports painted a picture of a subdued Jewish populace and a dispirited Arab population, a gross underestimation of the resolve and capability of these communities to challenge Ottoman rule. As Lawrence prepared to leverage the element of surprise in the impending attack on Aqaba, Prüfer's perspective remained clouded by distance and denial. The impending operation by Lawrence and the Arab forces would not only challenge Ottoman control, but also underscore the grave miscalculations of Prüfer and his contemporaries, who underestimated the burgeoning spirit of resistance among the peoples of the Middle East. In this critical juncture of history, as Lawrence aligned his fate with that of the Arab uprising, Prüfer's misconceptions starkly highlighted the chasm between the strategic ingenuity on the ground and the detached calculations of the Ottoman war machinery, setting the stage for a pivotal confrontation in the shifting sands of wartime alliances. Part 9. The Turning Tide. Lawrence's Daring Gambit at Aqaba. In the sweltering heat of the desert, amidst the perilous dunes on the way to Aqaba, T.E. Lawrence found himself grappling with a tumult of doubts. The journey was marked by hardship and loss, with venomous snakes claiming the lives of Arab soldiers as they sought rest under the cold desert sky. With the shadow of the Sykes-Picot Agreement looming over him, Lawrence was haunted by the specter of betrayal, fearing that all their sacrifices might ultimately serve only the interests of foreign powers, not the Arab cause for independence. However, a fateful encounter in the desolate expanses of the Wadi Sirhan Desert with Emir Nuri Shallan, a leader imbued with an indomitable will to defy the Turks, rekindled Lawrence's resolve. Inspired by Shallan's determination, Lawrence saw a glimmer of hope in the daunting mission ahead. The encounter galvanized him to push forward, driven by a renewed conviction to secure as much territory as possible for the Arab forces, striving to ensure that no more lives were lost in vain. As Lawrence and his troops drew closer to Aqaba, the odds mounted against them. They stumbled upon a significant Turkish force, dispatched as reinforcements to bolster Aqaba's defenses. Faced with a critical decision, Lawrence resolved to engage, launching a surprise attack that would determine the fate of their daring expedition. The clash at Aba el Lisan marked Lawrence's baptism by fire as a military leader. In a stunning display of tactical acumen, the Arab fighters, led by Lawrence, outmaneuvered the Turks, inflicting heavy casualties while suffering minimal losses. The victory at Aba el Lisan not only cleared the path to Aqaba, but also demonstrated the effectiveness of Lawrence's unconventional warfare strategies and the unbreakable spirit of his Arab allies. Under the cover of darkness, Lawrence's forces advanced on Aqaba, encountering little resistance. With tactics that emphasized stealth and surprise, they found the fort's defenses unprepared for their unconventional approach. After a brief standoff, which saw minimal combat, the Turkish commander capitulated, surrendering Aqaba to Lawrence and the Arab forces on July 6, 1917. The capture of Aqaba was a watershed moment in the Arab revolt, shifting the strategic balance in favor of the Allied powers. Recognizing Lawrence's instrumental role in this pivotal victory, the British military honored him with a promotion to major and awarded him the Victoria Cross, the Empire's highest military distinction. The triumph at Aqaba not only carved a new base of operations for the British and their Arab allies, but also underscored the potential of combining traditional military strategies with guerrilla tactics. Lawrence's audacity and vision had transformed Aqaba from an Ottoman stronghold into a linchpin for future operations, opening new horizons in the battle for Arab independence and altering the course of the war in the Middle East. Part 10, Shadows Over the Desert, Lawrence's Descent into Turmoil. In the aftermath of the triumphant capture of Aqaba, T.E. Lawrence found himself at a crossroads, grappling with the paradox of his burgeoning clout amidst the brutal realities of war. The accolades and honors bestowed upon him held little appeal. Lawrence saw them merely as tools to leverage greater strategic influence over British military operations in the Middle East. Emboldened by this newfound leverage, Lawrence envisioned a grandiose scheme, a simultaneous British and Arab offensive aimed at seizing the pivotal cities of Damascus and Jerusalem. The British command, now viewing Major Lawrence as an invaluable asset, gave their assent to his daring proposal. Yet, as the strategic machinations unfolded, a troubling inertia set in. Despite Aqaba's transformation into a well-stocked military hub, the anticipated northern advance stalled, leaving Lawrence and his Arab contingent mired in a dangerous lull. This stagnation soon gave way to a darker chapter, as the idle hands of war provoked further bloodshed under Lawrence's command. On September 19, 1917, Lawrence led a contingent of 100 men on a mission targeting a crucial Ottoman rail line. Their objective, to demolish a bridge and neutralize a train, a task that ended in a harrowing spectacle of violence. The aftermath of the explosion saw Lawrence's forces coldly executing Turkish soldiers in their attempt to flee, leaving scores dead and the wreckage strewn with wounded civilians, including women. This episode marked a grim departure from the chivalrous ideals that once defined Lawrence's military ethos. Yet, the most profound test of Lawrence's resolve and humanity lay ahead, in the Syrian town of Deraa. Captured while scouting a vital railway installation, Lawrence faced unimaginable horrors at the hands of the district governor. Despite his own account of preventing sexual assault, the consensus among scholars suggests that Lawrence endured both rape and torture, a harrowing ordeal that left indelible scars on his psyche. Upon his escape from captivity, those close to Lawrence observed a palpable shift in his demeanor. The vibrancy that once animated his spirit had dimmed, giving way to a chilling detachment from the surrounding carnage. Critics argue that the absence of visible physical scars belied the deeper, unseen wounds that Lawrence carried henceforth, a torment of the soul that transcended the physical brutality he had suffered. Lawrence's transformation was emblematic of the broader tragedy of war, a descent into a moral abyss that challenges the very essence of one's humanity. As he continued to navigate the shifting sands of conflict, the shadow of Deraa loomed large, a stark reminder of the personal toll exacted by the crucible of war. In this somber chapter of his life, Lawrence emerged not as the unblemished hero of Arabian legend, but as a figure profoundly altered by the darkness that war, in all its forms, inevitably brings. Part 11, Crossroads of Ambition, The American Dilemma in the Middle East. As the tumult of World War I reshaped the geopolitical landscape, two men, Aaron Aronson and William Yale, discovered firsthand the complex tapestry of American interests and hesitations regarding the Middle East. The United States' entry into the war in April 1917, while primarily targeted against Germany, inadvertently cast a spotlight on the strategic and political intricacies of the Middle Eastern theater. William Yale, upon his repatriation, found an audience keenly interested in his unique insights. The U.S. Bureau of Secret Intelligence, then a fledgling arm of the State Department under the guidance of Assistant Secretary Leland Harrison, recognized the value of Yale's first-hand experience. This resulted in his deployment to Cairo as the sole U.S. intelligence agent in the region. Despite his nominal title and lack of formal training in military intelligence, Yale's mission underscored a budding American interest in Middle Eastern affairs. Notably, upon his return to Cairo in October 1917 and after perusing British strategic documents, Yale identified T.E. Lawrence as a pivotal figure in understanding the region's unfolding dynamics. Lawrence's near-mythic reputation and deep engagement in the Arab revolt positioned him as a crucial source of insight for any power seeking a foothold or influence in the Middle East. Parallel to Yale's endeavors, Aaron Aronson sought to leverage American support for the Zionist cause and to galvanize U.S. action against the Ottoman Empire. His journey to the United States, towards the end of 1917, aimed to rally support among influential circles for the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Armed with the tragic news of his spy ring's dissolution and the loss of his sister and comrades, Aronson's mission held both personal and political urgency. Despite his efforts, Aronson confronted an insurmountable barrier in the form of U.S. President Woodrow Wilson's staunch anti-imperialist stance and the reluctance of American political figures, including Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, to intervene in British-dominated affairs in Palestine. This resistance reflected a broader American ambivalence towards entanglement in the intricate colonial and imperial contests over the Middle East. In navigating the intertwining paths of Yale's intelligence mission and Aronson's Zionist advocacy, a narrative emerges of the United States at a crossroads, caught between its emerging global stature and a cautious approach to the Middle Eastern quagmire. As World War I raged on, the American stance on the Middle East remained marked by a blend of curiosity, strategic consideration, and a reluctance to delve too deeply into the region's imperial entanglements. This delicate balancing act highlighted the intricate dance of diplomacy, intelligence, and national interest that would come to define America's engagement with the Middle East in the years to follow. Part 12: The Winds of Change, Shifting Fortunes in the Middle Eastern Theater. As 1918 dawned, the fog of war enveloped the Middle East, leaving the fate of its lands and peoples ensnared in a complex web of military maneuvers, political intrigues, and the unwavering aspirations of those caught in the conflict. Among them, Kurt Prufair, William Yale, and T.E. Lawrence each navigated the uncertain waters of war with distinct perspectives and objectives. Prufair, steadfast in his allegiance to Germany, viewed the turbulent shifts of World War I with cautious optimism. The Russian Revolution of 1917 and Russia's subsequent withdrawal from the war appeared as a beacon of hope for German military ambitions, particularly in Eastern Europe. Prufair's schemes extended to the political chessboard of Egypt, where he envisioned restoring Abbas Hilmi II to power, believing such a move would further bolster Germany's strategic position. However, Prufair's calculations were soon to be upended as the tide of war turned decisively against Germany, laying bare the precarious foundation of his aspirations. Meanwhile, William Yale's journey into the heart of Middle Eastern affairs brought him face to face with the enigmatic figure of T. Lawrence. Their meeting in March of 1918 opened Yale's eyes to the intricate realities of the region. Lawrence, with his intimate knowledge of the Arab revolt and the complex web of loyalties and ambitions it entailed, provided Yale with a sobering assessment of the challenges ahead. Lawrence's skepticism toward the Zionist movement and his candid insights into the Arab struggle for independence reflected a deep understanding of the region's volatile dynamics. As the contours of the conflict evolved, Lawrence found himself at a crossroads, wrestling with the promises and betrayals woven into the fabric of the Allied endeavor in the Middle East. The specter of the Sykes-Picot Agreement loomed large, embodying the colonial ambitions that threatened to overshadow the aspirations of the Arab peoples. Lawrence's persistent advocacy for Arab independence, however, began to bear fruit. In June of 1918, he received the confirmation he had long sought. Britain and France would acknowledge the independence of territories liberated by Arab forces. This pivotal moment reinvigorated Lawrence's resolve. Empowered by the prospect of recognized independence, Lawrence prepared to lead his Arab comrades in a triumphant march toward Damascus. It was a call to arms that resonated deeply with the Arab fighters, galvanizing them for the battles that lay ahead. For Lawrence, this was not merely a military campaign, but a crusade for dignity, sovereignty, and the right of self-determination, a vision that would shape the final chapters of the Arab Revolt and leave an indelible mark on the history of the Middle East. Part 13, A Final March, Triumph and Tragedy in the Liberation of Damascus. As the summer of 1918 waned into the early days of autumn, the theater of war in both Europe and the Middle East approached a pivotal juncture. With the United States lending its forces to the Western Front, the balance of power began to shift decisively against the Central Powers. It was during this time of monumental change that T. E. Lawrence prepared to lead his Arab forces on what would be their crowning endeavor, the liberation of Damascus. However, the campaign embarked upon under a pall of horror. Upon their arrival in the town of Taffa, Lawrence and his men were confronted with a sight of unspeakable brutality, the aftermath of a massacre, with the bodies of men, women, and children bearing mute testament to the atrocities committed. Consumed with a righteous fury, Lawrence exhorted his troops to avenge these heinous acts, setting the stage for a relentless pursuit of the retreating Turkish and German forces. In the ensuing days, the path to Damascus was marked by fierce skirmishes and a heavy toll on the enemy. Yet, the price of vengeance was steep, casting a shadow over the Arab forces' eventual entrance into Damascus. The city's liberation was greeted with jubilation by the local population, but the celebrations belied the deeper complexities and challenges that lay ahead. Among Lawrence's first acts was to attempt the establishment of an Arab governance framework in Damascus, aiming to secure the city's independence and fulfill the aspirations of the Arab revolt. However, the euphoria of liberation was soon tempered by the grim reality awaiting in the Turkish hospital. There, Lawrence and his allies were confronted with a scene of staggering inhumanity. Hundreds of wounded, untreated Turkish soldiers left to perish, a final haunting vestige of the cruelty that war engenders. Yet, the true disillusionment for Lawrence and the Arab leadership was still to unfold. Despite earlier assurances, the machinations of colonial ambition became evident when British and French authorities moved to impose the divisive terms of the Sykes-Picot Agreement. In a meeting that would mark the denouement of Lawrence's endeavors, British generals laid bare the future map of the region. Assyria truncated and subjugated, its future dictated by foreign powers, with Prince Faisal relegated to a nominal administrator under French oversight. The revelations at the Victoria Hotel in Damascus were a gut-wrenching betrayal of the sacrifices and struggles of the Arab fighters and their dreams of independence. For Lawrence, it was a bitter culmination of all he had worked towards, a realization of his worst fears. The following afternoon, as he departed from Damascus, Lawrence left behind not only the city he had fought so valiantly to free, but also a part of himself, forever altered by the trials and tribulations of war. Thus, the liberation of Damascus, while a momentous military achievement, also heralded a tragic epilogue of unfulfilled promises and dashed hopes, casting a long shadow over the legacy of the Arab Revolt and the complex figure of T. E. Lawrence himself. Part 14, End of War, Beginnings of a New Conflict, Yale, and Lawrence's frustrated efforts at Paris. The echoes of battle had barely faded in the Middle East when the armistice of November 11, 1918, heralded the end of World War I. However, for the peoples of the Middle East and the advocates of their cause, the true struggle was far from over. The impending Paris Peace Conference in January 1919 loomed as the decisive forum where the fate of the Middle East would be determined. It was here that T. E. Lawrence and William Yale saw a glimmer of hope for rectifying the injustices that had unfolded during the war and securing a measure of independence for the Arab peoples. In the weeks leading up to the conference, Lawrence vigorously championed the rights of Faisal Hussein to lead an independent Arab state, free from the clutches of French dominion. Despite his passionate advocacy, Lawrence found himself sidelined from the proceedings, his pleas for Arab self-determination lost amidst the political machinations of the assembled powers. Yale, too, brought with him the harrowing memories of war's endgame, including the grim tableau of the Turkish hospital in Damascus and the specter of shattered promises. Armed with his Yale plan, he sought to persuade the US delegation of the necessity for a just and equitable resolution to the Middle Eastern question, one that respected the aspirations of its peoples for independence and self-governance. Yet, his proposals were met with indifference, as the United States retreated into a posture of isolationism, eschewing further entanglement in the region's affairs. The outcomes of the Paris Peace Conference starkly reflected the triumph of imperial interests over the principles of self-determination and justice. The British and French mandates over Iraq, Palestine, and Syria were formalized, slicing up the Middle East in accordance with the secret bargains of the Sykes-Picot Agreement rather than the wishes of its inhabitants. William Yale's reflections on the conference starkly encapsulate the disillusionment and foreboding that characterized its aftermath, framing it as the prologue of the 20th century tragedy. Indeed, the legacy of Paris was marked by turmoil and discord, with France's eventual withdrawal from Syria in 1946, precipitating a sequence of upheavals and conflicts, and British dominion in Egypt and Iraq unraveling in the face of nationalistic fervor. The disillusioning outcome of the Paris Peace Conference thus heralded not the closure of a global conflict, but the genesis of a new chapter of strife and contention in the Middle East. Lawrence and Yale, despite their fervent efforts, were unable to steer the course of history away from the precipice of betrayal and disappointment. The decisions made in Paris would cast long shadows, sowing the seeds of resentment and resistance that would challenge imperial hegemony and redefine the contours of Middle Eastern identity and sovereignty. Part 15, A Solitary Journey, Lawrence's Quest for Peace Beyond the War. The echoes of the Paris Peace Conference reverberated bitterly in the heart of T.E. Lawrence, a man haunted by the palpable sense of betrayal that had overshadowed the conclusion of World War I. His disillusionment plunged him into profound periods of reflection and despair. As seen in the somber mornings spent in silent contemplation, lost in the shadowy recesses of memory and dismay, seeking solace away from the accolades and the public eye, Lawrence endeavored to reinvent himself, adopting the aliases John Hume Ross and later Thomas Edward Shaw. His return to civilian life marked a deliberate step towards anonymity as he joined the Royal Air Force. In this new chapter, Lawrence pursued a path of quietude, embracing roles that kept him far from the burdens of leadership and the haunting legacy of the Arab Revolt. Lawrence's introspection found an outlet in the written word. In 1922, he painstakingly produced hand-printed editions of his memoir, Seven Pillars, for a close circle of confidants. As word of its profound insights and narrative power spread, demand for the memoir grew, eventually leading to its mass publication. However, Lawrence's meticulous revisions of subsequent versions reflected his struggle to reconcile the text with his personal demons, excising and altering passages that evoked the conflict's violence and his inner turmoil. Those who knew Lawrence observed signs of his profound psychological strife, recognizing his moments of suicidal depression and reticence to revisit the war's dark chapters as manifestations of shell shock, today understood as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Lawrence's internal battle with the ghosts of the past underscored a profound disquiet that permeated his post-war existence. A defining moment of Lawrence's lifelong quest for redemption occurred at Buckingham Palace, where he was summoned to receive one of Britain's highest honors, becoming a Knight Commander of the Order of the British Empire. In a moment of unparalleled defiance and conscience, Lawrence approached King George V, only to personally renounce the accolade. A symbolic rejection of the imperial machinations and unkept promises that had tainted the Arab Revolt's legacy. This unforgettable act left an indelible mark on history, capturing the essence of Lawrence's deeply held convictions and his enduring disillusionment with the outcomes of the war. Tragically, Lawrence's quest for peace and redemption was cut short by a fatal motorcycle accident on May 13, 1935. His untimely death at the age of 46 abruptly ended a life characterized by extraordinary accomplishments and profound sacrifices. Lawrence's legacy, marked by his indomitable spirit, complex identity, and the moral quandaries that shaped his actions, leaves an enduring imprint on the annals of history, a testament to the enduring struggle of the human spirit in the face of adversity and moral compromise. Final summary. At the heart of the tumultuous narrative of World War I lies the intricate and poignant saga of the Middle East, a region where the echoes of conflict have resonated long after the guns fell silent. Central to this storied landscape was T.E. Lawrence, a figure synonymous with the struggle against the imperial ambitions of France and Great Britain. Alongside Lawrence, three other remarkable individuals navigated the complex political and military currents of the Middle Eastern theater, each leaving an indelible mark on the course of history. Yet, despite their valiant efforts and the sacrifices of countless others, the aftermath of World War I revealed the limitations of individual agency in the face of overarching geopolitical forces. The web of intrigue, aspirations, and betrayals that unfolded during and after the war underscored a bitter truth. The destinies of nations and peoples were often contingent upon the whims and agreements of distant powers. As the dust of the battlefield settled, the contours of a new Middle East emerged, shaped by the Sykes-Picot Agreement and the outcomes of the Paris Peace Conference. The aspirations for independence and self-determination nurtured in the crucible of war were met with the reality of a region carved up according to the strategic interests of the victors. The post-war era, with its reshaped borders and mandated territories, opened a Pandora's box of nationalistic fervor, contested legacies, and enduring conflicts. In the wake of these seismic shifts, the figures who once strode across the Middle Eastern stage, Lawrence among them, were left to grapple with the consequences of their actions and the unfolding of events they could scarcely have predicted. Lawrence's post-war life, marked by introspection, withdrawal, and a quest for atonement, reflects the profound disillusionment that followed the war's resolution. His narrative serves not only as a testament to the complexities of his own character, but also as a mirror to the broader disillusionment and questioning that characterized the period. In this book, the tragedy and tumult of World War I in the Middle East are not just historical footnotes, but rather critical chapters in the ongoing story of a region whose fate was and continues to be shaped by the interplay of local aspirations and global geopolitics. The enduring impact of these events reminds us of the long shadows cast by history and the ways in which the outcomes of wars extend far beyond the battlefield, shaping the lives of generations to come. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.